This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Danger! Danger!
It's not a lineup, it's not an army, it's not a stable, and it's not a family. It's an alliance of businessmen.
Take it right.
Place to Be Nation, you're listening to the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, featuring a different way to look at and debate the history of wrestling. And now, your co-host, the PTBN PWO two-man power trip, JT and Will.
The Dangerous Alliance would rather die than surrender to you.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode 9 of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, JT, and joining me, as always, is good old Will from Texas. Will, how you doing?
I'm hanging in there, man. I'm all right.
All right, very good. Glad you're hanging in. You're awake tonight. We're starting nice and early. We're good to go. And we're pulling Dan McGinn away from the Republican debate here that he's so engrossed in, but... He's loyal to the show, so he's here to run the clock and moderate for us as always.
Yeah, guys, I got to tell you, there's 10 suits and one dress up on the stage right now, but those guys have nothing on the debates we're going to have tonight.
Right. So can I make like a period joke about you when you're bleeding from wherever? Can I do that since you're the host and or is Will the dumb more than Donald Trump? I don't know.
I'd rather you
Scott
not.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not the Donald Trump of this panel.
Anyway, so if you're new to the show, you shouldn't be. You should be listening to this each and every other week. But you can check out the full archive, placetobenation.com. But what we do here is we have three different falls, three different games that Dan sets up for us. Every fall goes 30 minutes. We'll do some mail at the end. We'll have some breaks. We'll have some laughs. We'll have some fun. We have an F jar. Get the F out because Will and I are notorious F-bomb droppers. And right now we're tied at one apiece through 8 episodes. So that's not bad. The loser at the end of the year has to purchase a network subscription or an NWA Classics subscription, as we'll see, come the end of December. So, Daniel, why don't you step in here and divulge what is fall number one?
Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants, putting songs in beer, making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom,
Fellas, it's a new game. We're going to try it tonight. It's called Grudge Match.
Ooh, so Grudge Match is an interesting one, Will. So we're bookers. We're on the booking committee, and Dan's our promoter. And Dan's high on the hog, sitting up in the ivory tower, and he commissioned us to come up with a card. And we have, he's going to give us, how about this? Dan's going to assign us the matches, and you and I have to argue as bookers who we think should go over in the match. So Dan's sure. Going to give a name to each of us to defend. And you and I are going to argue, and at the end of that argument, Dan will decree who is going over in that match. How's that sound?
Love it.
Okay. So, promoter Dan, who are the first two guys that Will and I will be arguing?
I'm really amazed, guys. You did 10 guys each, and you each picked 10 different guys. It's awesome.
Nice.
So let's go with a nice hot opener in a matchup between Brian Pillman for JT versus Chris Jericho for Will.
Ooh. That's a tough one, Will. Why don't you start us off? Why should Jericho go over in this match?
Well, knowing Jericho, okay, if we're going 2015, he's a former world champion. It's a no-brainer, right? If we're going at maybe their peak, Brian Pillman's peak versus Jericho's peak, again, I think Jericho played bigger on a bigger stage. You know, he came into the WWF, highly criticized by the wrestlers there, really sloppy at times, right? And by early 2000, when he had the Phantom title switch with Triple H, completely had won over the WWF crowd, even though he was a WCW guy. And a year later, when he became the unified world champion, I was hooked. I was full blown behind Jericho, had great matches with The Rock that year. Much better than I would think anyone else that year that faced The Rock. So to me, I like Brian Pillman. We're going to see Brian Pillman later on in this show. But to me, Jericho's the easy winner here.
I like Jericho a lot. There's a reason for a long time he was always a bridesmaid, never the bride, because he's very, very good. But I want the guy who pops. I want that guy who's out of his mind, because that's what we need nowadays. We're all very, you know, in our mainstream wrestling is all very bland. It's all very sanitized and rinsed. And Chris Jericho's become part of that machine. I want the guy who's out of his mind, that stands out from the pack. And you take Brian Pillman in that 95-96 stretch where he was just, you know, next level character wise. You never knew what he was going to do next. Instant chemistry with the crowd, no matter where he went. Went to ECW, everyone loved him, and then he pissed all over him and they hated him. Then he goes, you know, he's on WCW. You didn't know what he was going to do next. He outworked the, you know, smartest guys in wrestling, Eric Bischoff, Hulk Hogan, and got himself out of his deal inside a multi-million-dollar pact with Vince McMahon. And he outworked Vince McMahon after he had, you know, a debilitating car accident that crushed his ankle, left him gimpy, and he still locked in a major deal. He outworked Vince McMahon. I mean, this is a guy, to me, that is in our locker room. He's telling me, pushing me to say it's his time. He wants to be the guy that goes over. And guess what? He's awesome in the ring as well. So we're not losing out any in-ring action between Jericho and Pillman, a guy that can work multiple styles. And I think Pillman's a guy. We've seen what Jericho can do, Dan. Let's see what Brian Pillman can do on top with the shot, finally.
Well, let me counter this, okay? Because you mentioned character work. Is there any better character work than Chris Jericho, Cruiserweight Champion, 1998?
Yeah, but is there any worse than corny 2001, trying too hard, making lame puns, Jericho?
With The Rock. He was great with
The
Rock.
No, before that, with the whole...
No. But is there anything worse than like stealing Marlena? You know what I mean? Right before
he
dies, he
stole
a
guy's wife and banged her in front of him on video. That's hardcore.
Is there anything cheesier than like flying Brian? Like in that horrible. I mean, Pillman was a standout in that era, dude. I love Brian Pillman. He was a standout in that era, but Jericho single-handedly reinvented that Cruiserweight division 98. It was all, I mean, he made it that entire division.
Brian Pillman innovated the Cruiserweight division in WCW. There's no Cruiserweight division without him.
No, wrong. Without Liger.
Oh, come on. You needed someone for Liger to work.
Okay,
yeah, no one else.
Are you going
to
let me finish my
Who's going to work? Arachnaman? Go ahead.
You're going to let me finish my thought?
Go ahead.
All right. See, just like a Republican, always in. Now, having said that, all right, Jericho in 98 has the character work down. Like I said, we already know he's a proven commodity, right? Jericho's a proven commodity. He can carry the belt. You know, you talked about a bride versus a bridesmaid. Well, Pillman is like the sixth bridesmaid down, you know, the one that like you were forced to put in the wedding because the uncle who sponsored the wedding wanted his daughter in it. You know, that's Pillman. Whereas Jericho is right there. Could easily steal the bride away from the groom if you wanted to, you know, just that's the way he rolls.
Yeah,
so
my point with
he's a proven main eventer. Pillman, because he was so unhinged, because he was such a loose cannon, because he has a reputation for screwing promoters over, there's no way I'm going to put him over a proven respected worker like Chris Jericho.
You got to roll the dice, guys. Chris Jericho's always going to be there. He's always going to come back because that's who he is. Brian Pillman, chance to become a star. Do you want the guy who's the steady hand that's always there when you need him, or do you want the guy that could maybe break through and kick business up a big notch? Roll the dice on the superstar. That's how I'd build a basketball team. That's how I'd build a baseball team. That's how I'm going to build my promotion. Roll the dice, build a star. Don't worry about the steady hands.
I like your vision. Except roll the dice on the guy that shows up dead in the hotel room. I can't do it.
You know what?
Can't do it.
Can't judge the process by the results. The process says go for the star.
Okay. I think we did decent there. Dan, what's your take, buddy?
Are you a pussy or are you going to play it safe? Or are you going to be a man, Dan? Take it by the balls. And
I was going to say double count out. No, I'm just so much about what you said about Brian Pillman is true. The one thing I always say about Brian Pillman is, what if? What if he didn't get injured? What if he didn't die prematurely? I mean, yeah,
he probably
could have been a star. Although one thing I will say about Jericho is he was never one to not put a guy over. So I think he'll put this guy over this time. We'll go with Brian Pillman.
Yeah, Dan, that's how you stand up and be a man, brother.
Lame.
You'll hate me later, I'm sure. So.
We'll get the pallbearers to put the corpse on top of Jericho he counts three. All right.
Listen to you.
Moving on.
You'd be so mean.
Guys, battle of a couple rough and tough Irishmen. For JT, we got Ken Shamrock. For Will, we have Sheamus.
Oh, that's an interesting one. I thought for sure he was going to say Finley when he said Irishman for you.
Oh, yeah.
Ken Shamrock and Sheamus. To me, again, we go back to the scenario we just had. We have the guy that has the charisma, that has the connection, has the real-life badass background, a guy that's believable that you can hook into. Sure, maybe not the most polished guy in the ring, but he got there eventually. To me, I want the mainstream star in this one. I want the guy that's going to connect and bring in the audience. I don't, Sheamus is a dime a dozen.
I couldn't disagree with you more. I think Sheamus, the biggest tragedy in Sheamus's career has been outside of his control, and that's the booking. But when you put him inside the ring and you put him with anyone who can go, he's there. You put him with a guy like Rusev, who was very green, gave Rusev his first legitimate, really good to great match, in my humble opinion, with the U.S. title change last year, had match of the year contenders with Daniel Bryan, which you say, well, everybody has match of the year contenders. No, not everybody. Like, Kane never had a match of the year contender with Daniel Bryan, but Sheamus did, and he did it on cards that were loaded with guys like Cena and CM Punk. Sheamus is a guy that has a unique style, unique look. Look, I like the idea of Ken Shamrock. To me, the problem with Ken Shamrock is once he steps in the ropes, he's so mediocre, you forget that he's quote-unquote the world's most dangerous man.
All right, so you're saying anyone, not everyone, can have a match with Daniel Bryan, so your baseline is Kane. So you're saying the jump is either Kane or
no,
Kane's
just
else.
The first guy. I mean, I've seen other mediocre matches with Daniel Bryan, but Daniel Bryan clearly outclasses a guy.
Look, I think Sheamus is a very, very good hand. I think he can have very good to great matches, but I haven't seen him. And you can say it's the booking all you want, but guys eventually will rise above the booking if they have that connection with the crowd. I just don't think Sheamus has it. If I'm putting him in the ring, I'm saying, Sheamus, I'm going to take care of you, man. You're going to make me some money. We're going to, by putting over the guys, because I'm going to have you go over the guys below you and then put over my top stars. That's your role. But I will take care of you. You're a great hand. I can trust you to go out there and do the right thing. The crowd will like you or hate you, but they're never going to really, really plunk down that money. You're never going to cross over for me. I look at Ken Shamrock. He can come out and he can give me a passable enough match. Sure, he's not going to have five-star candidates, but you know what? He can maybe hit 3, 3.5 if you get him in there with the right guy, and that's enough for me, because I have a former, very credible UFC world champion on my roster. That's the guy I want going over in a match with a guy like Sheamus. I mean, if you're telling me you have Shamrock against other big-name top dogs, yes, I'd go with you. But to me, I don't think, and Sheamus is even young, so you can't even say he's like, all right, we're going to put over a young guy.
Wait, hold on. We just did an imaginary scenario with a dead guy and a 45-year-old. Doesn't matter what age he is. We're talking
fine. Well, never in his career was he young, so I'll say that. How about, if we're picking him to go over, it's not like at some
I'm
point.
I'm just saying. It's,
he started old. He started old. But you could, if you could
so
argue
did Shamrock,
with me.
Really. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
Fair enough.
Because Shamrock, remember, Shamrock had actually wrestled earlier, like in a was it PWFG, Pro Wrestling Fujiwara Gumi in Japan?
The F-bomb there.
I think he was Wayne Shamrock there.
Yes,
Or
Ken Wayne Shamrock, right? Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. And now you say, like, Sheamus is a guy who doesn't get reactions. Well, in the right circumstance, when he's booked right, he does. He gets very good reactions. Now take another guy who was booked in a main event level feud with The Undertaker and goes out and has a snooze fest with The Undertaker for 20 minutes where you could hear a pin drop in the arena because the crowd could not be more disinterested.
In fairness, that was an awful period for The Undertaker physically. He couldn't do anything. He was hurt badly. Look at the stretch of matches The Undertaker had in 1999. I mean, not even Steve Austin at his peak could get a good match from The Undertaker.
We're not talking about match quality. We're talking about crowd reaction. Nobody gave a crap about Ken Shamrock by that time. Like, there was a good reason Ken Shamrock stepped out. Like, he wasn't over. He really wasn't over when you look at
his feud. If you look at his feud later in the era of Blackman, I thought, and even with the stuff with Vince where he's in a straitjacket, definitely got reactions in 99.
Yeah, you can't say Vince.
All right, give me every Sheamus match then. Give me the 15 matches of Randy Orton that the crowd has slept through throughout 2015.
Hey, there's a reason Randy Orton's not on my list, because I think he's one of the worst wrestlers there. I think, like I said, once again, you're putting Sheamus with Randy Orton. Put him with Rusev like he did last year. amazing U.S. title match. You put him with Daniel Bryan. You put him with Cesaro. Great matches. Great pay-per-view match series. So to me, like I said, it is about the booking with Sheamus. It's who you're pairing him up with. Yeah, you're right. Put him 15 matches with Randy Orton. No way. You put him with guys like Cesaro, Rusev, Daniel Bryan. Who else has Sheamus had?
You put Ken Shamrock in with Daniel Bryan.
Put John Morrison. Remember the TLC match he had with Morrison, which was really great. You know, Sheamus can roll, man. To me, this one, again, not even close.
When Sheamus can get a match stipulation over where the loser has to eat dog food, come talk to me. That's getting stuff over.
I don't think that match got much reaction either. The Bulldog.
Crowd loved it.
Yeah, that crowd was comatose.
When Sheamus takes unprotected chair shots to the face like a dumbass, you come tell me. Come talk to get over an angle. I want that guy. He'll take steel to the face to put everything over.
All right, Dan, who are you going with?
He may look stupid, but I'm going Sheamus on this one. I can't stand watching Ken Shamrock wrestle. I'm sorry.
You're the worst, Dan. You're in charge of the stupid promotion.
Hey, now, you know, JT did bring up a fair point. You know, Ken Shamrock was at one time a huge UFC draw and a huge thing. But, you know, we're not real fighting. You know, this isn't Ronda Rousey here.
But he's still a crossover star with a major name.
But once again, that's why you build up the guys who are going to stick around and be there.
He is sticking around, though. He's committed. He switched genres.
He's a flash in the pan. You know, he came in for a cup of coffee, went running back to UFC.
I can go to the gym and find 10 guys like Sheamus now.
You can't. That's the problem. You can't.
I go to my next match?
Next match.
I have 17 minutes to go, by the way. Let's go. Speaking of Fit Finley, Will, you have Fit Finley.
I knew it.
JT, you have the Big Boss Man.
Ooh. All right. Go ahead, Will.
Okay. Fit Finley, if you look at his career arc, is a legend. All right. Big Boss Man actually in the United States had a much higher role in the WWF than Finley ever did in WCW or WWF. I can't take that away. Once again, we're going over match quality and we talk about what ifs. Finley should have been a much bigger star because once again, and these are the guys I love, the guys that you can put in a match and they're almost always going to give a great performance. And that's Finley. He's a guy who is going to prove, is Big Boss Man, is he tough enough to endure? You know, think about his wars with Regal, with Benoit, on the Indies, had great matches with Sammy Callahan, who's now in WWE developmental.
Did we not watch all of 1994 WCW together, Will? You're questioning the Boss Man's toughness after that series with Vader.
I like the Boss Man. You know what? I like the Boss Man. No, I'm not questioning his toughness.
You just said, Kenny, is he tough enough to hang in? I think
Finley?
He's more than proven.
Yeah, I guess so. I'll concede that. But having said that, you know, the Boss Man had that one peak as the Boss Man. Never in 94, Ray Traylor, I like him, but never recaptured that one brief run that he had.
So is that on him, or is that like your Sheamus argument with the way he was booked in WCW with the goofy names and continually changing gimmicks? And
No. But even like in WWF. No, I'm talking about like, you know.
He was really over though. Like for that.
Like for those 2 years, you're right. He was over.
What two years are you talking about?
Like from what, 88, 89 to 91? Somewhere around there?
Yeah, but I'm even talking when he came back in 98 for about a year and a half or so.
That was horrible, man.
Definitely over his heel. So that first year with all the hardcore stuff.
The Big Show, the hardcore stuff was garbage. See, that's the problem I have with this, JT, and it's really hard for me to get over, is that one of my least favorite styles / times of wrestling is like that 98, 99 Vince Russo infused WWF.
So how do you defend?
Was it a hugely popular time period? I can't deny that, but it was garbage. Jerry Springer was hugely popular at the time.
Well, how do you get past that? Finley's 99 was Junkyard Invitationals and hardcore matches with Knobs.
Absolute tragedy. Absolute travesty of justice for someone with Finley's talent.
Right, so you could say the same for Boss Man, but he Boss Man was a guy that could get over the inane, right? So he gets over these inane hardcore feuds, feeding dogs to people, killing, you know, riding caskets, but he did it so well that it was like
one of the worst matches of all time with Al Snow and that Kennel.
Of course it was.
God,
but the feud and the character work was great.
Garbage.
But heading back to the early 90s, a guy that was in a sea of perpetually over stars that were like superhero level, this in your face mega stars, these guys. And he stood out as a guy that never needed a title, that would garner mega pops, that was getting over so well as a heel that they basically had to turn him face. And by the way, had potentially some of the best matches that Hulk Hogan had in the WWF during that run, you know, from in the pay-per-view era. And, you know, with the cage match and the other stuff they had on Saturday's main event, a guy that was a believable top heel with and made Akeem credible by being so over himself as a heel that they were big enough to feud with the mega powers. Then they turn him face and he goes out there and becomes one of the most over stars for the next 2 years, to the point where, I mean, the pop when he pins like the Mountie and the Jailhouse match is crazy. And his feud with the Heenan family, just a guy that, again, connected with the crowd, had a great presence, a great charisma. And I love Finley, too. Another guy to me who's a great steady hand, a really hard worker. And sure, he may have been a star overseas, but he had plenty of chances to make that work in America. It's not like he was only here for, you know, a month.
Well, I think he did make it work.
But he never
in this got, sense.
There's no way that you could tell he Finley ever got to the peak of like overness that the Big Boss Man had.
No, he didn't. You're right. But having said that,
that's the guy.
Once again, look at in the ring. I know you pick these guys where you have to run away from what's going on actually in the ring.
I don't think we have to do Boss Man as much.
But with Finley, but nothing that Boss Man did. And I like a lot of Big Boss Man matches, but nothing he did compares to the Regal series. Nothing. And then to go 10 years later from the uncensored William Regal, and then that they had the, what was it, the street fight, or what did they call it, where they were outside the arena like with the cars?
Yeah, the parking lot.
Parking lot match. Nothing from 96. And then to come back 10 years later, reinvent himself with the Shillelagh, with Hornswoggle as the little bastard, as one of Booker T's minions, to come back and reinvent himself and then have classic matches all over again, get fired, have classic matches on the indies, and then come back, you know, get his job back. And unfortunately, we haven't seen Finley back in the ring since he's been back with WWE. But to me, look at that. Boss Man, yeah, he comes back. He has an awesome, horrible feud with Al Snow. Translates that into an awesomely horrible feud with the Big Show and Big Show.
Well, before that, he had the run as Vince's.
To me, that is all garbage. It's all Russo garbage. Like I said, you're never going to convince me that any of that was good because I just sat and watched it.
Well, I don't even need to because we're already
when I watched when I took care of footage with the 99 yearbook, it wasn't entertaining. It wasn't
right. All right,
good.
But we don't even need that to prove that Boss Man should go over here, because we've already said he's at his peak, was a much bigger star, connected much more with the crowd. And to me, you don't have to run from his in-ring work as much as maybe other guys that you'd put in this slot. And the style of Finley works, while we love it, sure, it's never been proven to be a mega draw on top of a major promotion. And Dan, if you want this to be a high-level promotion, the style Finley works, sure, we may love trading the tapes and talking about it on message boards, but it's never drawn a serious dime in America. And the Boss Man has proven that he can work a style that draws money during the biggest money-drawing period in wrestling history.
Here's how I'm going to counter that. The way matches are worked, and we've seen this all across the country, especially in the territory days when you had different styles in different places, okay? If a promotion is serious, they can get any style over they want. You can train an audience. Audience are lemmings. They are Pavlov's dogs. They will be trained to respond. And if the WWE wanted a Fit Finley style of wrestling to get over, they could do it. And they've proven that they could get anything that they want over if they're serious about it. You want to make it more of a shoot style-esque Brock Lesnar type match, they've proven they can get that over. They've proven they can get the shtick over if they invest fully in it. Yeah, but nobody's ever fully invested in Fit Finley.
It's never been proven.
Well, now I'm saying, let's get Fit Finley over by putting him over a Boss Man, a guy who's, okay, he's tough enough to get his ass beat by Finley. That's great. And let's get Finley style over as well.
It's never been proven to do it, Dan.
Guys, if you guys keep talking like this, my main event is going to be played on Nitro the next day. Okay, let's say Finley goes for the shillelagh, Bossman ducks it, hits the sidewalk slam, boom, match over. Okay, next match. Plucky Comic Relief. We're going to do for JT Doink.
Wait, who won? You lost me. Bossman?
Bossman.
He gave it to Bossman.
Plucky Comic Relief. JT, you got Doink. Will, you have Goldust.
Ooh. Oh, this isn't even close.
Yeah, this is a tough
one. Not even close. I mean, you can't. Goldust, one of the greatest tag team workers of all time, one of the greatest singles. Not one of the greatest singles workers of all time. Let me rephrase that. One of the guys who can go into a match with little to no heat, and by the end of the match, have the crowd just leaping off their feet. Just an amazing performer. I don't think Dustin Rhodes gets nearly enough credit for the work he's put in. And as we've seen in 1994 WCW, one of the MVPs for that company in that year. And Doink, I'm sorry, has never been an MVP.
If I could say F-bombs, Dan, I'd really say you F'd me here. this is a tough one. Doink. Doink had perhaps one of the most underrated years ever in 1993, and you talk of a guy, and it's a tough sell against Goldust because Goldust did a lot of the same stuff, but a guy that took a really absurd gimmick. I mean, Goldust you could at least sell as saying, well, it was an absurd gimmick, but there's enough meat there to envision how it could get over. Doink is a wrestling clown. I mean, literally the epitome of what everyone makes fun of wrestling being, right? A bunch of clowns, a bunch of goofs. And he had to take this gimmick of wearing a green wig, makeup, and dressing like a goofball clown. And he took it in such a warped direction. It was so great, it being so sinister and, you know, scary looking. And he made it work. And he had legit heat for a lot of 1993. And by the way, he could work his ass off. Had great matches with Bret Hart, with Marty Jannetty. Even, you know, got serviceable level stuff with Crush. And had a really good feud hanging to Mania, and a guy that was just completely submarined by the man, a character by the man playing it, just melting down and leaving the promotion and then just got completely watered down. But even at that point, was still somewhat over. But, I mean, peak Doink from January to September 93 was just a tremendous top-level heel character-wise, and a guy that you could say it will go out there and make the most ridiculous stuff work. But even I can't really convince myself.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm just going to bring the in-ring here. And yeah. I'm just going to say that there's no comparison here.
Doink was very good in 93 in the ring.
Matt Bourne was okay. But, you know, Matt Bourne, once again, you're talking about demons there that, you know, Goldust had his problems. You know, if you look out through his entire career, he had his problems. But, man, Matt Bourne, at that time, he was playing the Doink character. Really just, you know, just he was a broken spirit at that time. And it just off his rocker. Just I couldn't trust Matt Bourne to be a guy I'm going to go forward in my company at that period in time.
Look, if you had to be Big Josh, you'd be forlorn as well.
Yeah, Big Josh, throw him out too.
Yeah, the choice is Goldust here, guys. Sorry. That one's pretty easy. This one might be a little bit harder. JT, you got Bret Hart. Will, you have John Cena.
Oh, wow. All right. This should probably be our last one, I'm guessing. Bret Hart, perpetually underappreciated. A guy that always you come back to when the guy you try and get over gets burned out. And a guy that never, ever had the fans turn on him so radically that they have to use every booking trick under the sun to try and trick you into thinking he's still the top guy, the top face. You can't talk work rate with me because I know John Cena is tremendous in the ring, but so is Bret Hart. Both have equally had a great catalog of matches. You know, a guy in Bret Hart who proved not only could he be a face that fans beloved and could believe in as a hero, something that Cena tries to be, but has been unable to really connect that across all levels. Bret Hart did it from young fans, from kids through teenagers and into adults that looked up to Bret Hart, especially, you know, an entire nation of Canada. He was like a hero there. And then was able to invent himself into a character that had never really been done before on a major stage, where he was a heel in one country and then a face around the rest of the world. And got crazy reactions as both. I mean, like nuclear heat in the U.S. in 97. And then a hero around the world. If you see some of the footage when he went to Europe and Canada in that time, was treated like a war hero. And that had never really been done. And a guy that was there through the downtimes, but also was part of the Renaissance that doesn't maybe get the credit he deserves, goes to WCW, booking submarines him, still has some good matches, including a classic with Chris Benoit, you know, after his brother had passed away and he lost his urge for it. But a guy that worked his way up to his whole career, that's the guy I want on my team, that busted his ass for me, that even when he knew he was probably going to get screwed over, stayed loyal, signed that long contract. That's the guy I want back in our team.
You're never going to convince me that a Canadian's better than this, than John Cena. I'm sorry. Now, having said that, you know, let's just throw that out there. You know, let's ignore all that stuff I said about Chris Jericho earlier, okay? But John Cena, I don't think people give him enough credit for being able to adapt to the situations. He has been told, he's been given a directive to be this horrible baby face, right? I mean, just a horrible baby face, to become the most despised yet most beloved character in the company all at once, right? Nobody has ever had a dynamic like John Cena, where half the crowd equally boos and half the crowd equally cheers him at the same time. It's just insane the way that this happened. One of the most unique guys. A guy, and this is something Bret Hart has not proven, okay, is that he could be a major draw. John Cena has proven he could be a major draw. Sorry, Bret Hart was one of the three or four lowest drawing WWF champions of all time, you know, in the doldrums. So there was a reason that Bret Hart,
you know, that
never made it to
champions are different now than they were then.
But it really is, because when
he's
presided over
the entire downswing of the wrestling
industry. You look at
industry.
The crowd reaction, and this is something you really can't dispute, man. We're talking genuine emotional crowd reaction, visceral reactions. We're not talking about chants. We're not talking about intro music pops. We're talking about...
And Bret Hart doesn't have
investment?
That?
No, we're talking about pure investment into the match from beginning to end. Nobody today... No, I'm not even saying Bret Hart doesn't. I'm building the case for Cena.
Yeah, but he's going against Bret Hart.
Hold on.
I think a guy with the same criteria. All right.
Man, fucking Republicans. Here, count that
F-bomb.
Count that F-bomb. Christ. Let me spit my fucking words out.
Two There's more. Another... Oh, one more.
I'm going to buy you that NWA 24/7. Nothing I can't hate more, man. I sat and I was silent that whole time that you were talking about Bret Hart.
All right.
Anyway, so Cena is a guy who has, and you can't deny this, you put Rock up against Triple H, Randy Orton, who else when The Rock came back? They're not getting those pay-per-view records or those arena records that they're getting like in Miami and New York without Cena. That's a Cena deal. I'm not saying Rock doesn't draw huge numbers. I'm saying Cena makes that happen. Why? Because even when they hate him, people are there to be emotionally invested in John Cena's matches. And we've seen this throughout the years, man. Dead crowds. I mean, I don't know how many reaction shows I've done for pay-per-views. Dead crowds. Crowd goes huge for Cena's match. Dead crowd for the main event. You know, people nowadays are more invested in John Cena than anyone else. And it's not because he's booked like Superman so much as people genuinely have a reaction to him. Now, the comparison to Bret Hart, in ring, man, I'm going to go match for match. I think John Cena's right there. You know, my buddy Dylan Hills has called him the best big-time wrestler ever in WWE history. It might not have been Dylan who said it. Might have been my buddy Charles. I forget which one of them said it. And I can't argue with that. Bret Hart had a reputation for performing big on a big show, and he did. You know, I think he was our Mr. SummerSlam, right? When we did Mr. SummerSlam, Scott, or JT?
Can I talk? Yeah. No, I'm like, it came down to Bret Hart and John Cena. We couldn't decide, remember?
Yeah. So here we go. But when you look at what Cena has had to face and what Bret Hart had to face, I think it's a no-brainer, man. I think Cena is the guy you go with. If you want the guy who's going to fill an 80,000-seat arena once, you go with Bret Hart. If you want the guy who does it year in, year out, you go with John Cena.
I would argue that the brand that John Cena represents is much bigger and much more of a draw in of itself than when Bret Hart was part of it. when he was leading the way, when it was a completely dead brand that didn't have.
If that was the case, then this would be a completely useless exercise, because we're trying to build a brand based off stars. And so if you're going to give me a star that I need to put those people in the seats, you can't build a brand without those stars. And,
right,
and
but I don't think John Cena is the star that built that brand. That's what I'm saying. I think the brand was established and built when he showed up.
No, I don't.
I think the
brand
was dead when Bret Hart showed up.
But you got to look at the things that Cena went through. I mean, we're talking the Chris Benoit scandal. You know, he was leading the charge at that time. He had to be the guy.
Bret was bringing them back from the steroid. Vince McMahon almost went to jail during the time when Bret Hart was in charge of the company.
And Cena brought them back to credibility. Bret Hart,
he didn't get the chance.
Much lower ratings.
He didn't get the chance. Vince bailed on him. Vince
had the belt for what, all of 94?
Yeah, right. Like, and it was, you know.
It was garbage business, yeah. And you know, a year later, Cena was there packing him in.
He was?
Yeah. I mean, is he Stone
John
Cold?
John Cena was packing them in 2008, you're telling me. That's what you that's your argument.
No, I'm saying that, you know, but Bret Hart wasn't. Like, when you recover from the Benoit scandal, because I know at least in 2009, and I can attest this.
All right, so here's my argument about
Night of the Champions. John Cena was right there, yeah. What?
Yeah, John Cena was injured for, you know, 5 months following the Benoit scandal.
Right.
And so, did the company crumble during that 5 months? Was it bankruptcy, and then he turned it around?
Well, no, Bret Hart didn't turn it around.
Well, so how did John Cena turn around? He was in the...
But they were. After the Benoit scandal, WWF was getting like the lowest ratings they'd had in like a decade at that time, right?
And he was in... Oh, no, I'd say now, but when he's been
now,
on top forever.
But, well, you mean when John Cena is definitely not featured as the top player? Absolutely.
Oh, come on, please. Oh,
and Seth Rollins has
player.
To carry it? Sure.
Oh, John Cena's still... feature as a top player. Don't play coy with me. And you're saying they packed him in. He was the middle of the card at WrestleMania 24, the first Mania after, and that was not sold on John Cena's triple threat match.
Was that?
Him, Orton, and Triple H.
They might have gone on in the middle. Still for a world title, wasn't it?
Yeah, but that didn't sell that show. Yeah. Undertaker, Edge, and Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair did.
No, Edge has never sold a show in his life. But that's
all right, fellas.
Show.
All right. Break it up. Time is up, as it turns out, a long time ago. Do I get in on this subscription thing if I pick not Bret Hart, if I pick John Cena?
Sure.
Then John Cena, hustle, loyalty, and respect, you can't see me.
Had to buy his way to victory.
I'm a good booker.
Look, I like that. But to me, John Cena is one of those guys who, throughout the years, has just won me over. I mean, whether it's the feud with Mark Henry, the feud with Cena, CM Punk, it's just countless, man. The Rusev stuff, just, I don't know. I'm Cena Nation, man. I can't help it.
All right, Dan. Let's go ahead and take a break. I need to recover from this getting screwed over like Bret Hart was so many years ago, screwed by the promoter, picking the young brash Texan. So we're going to go ahead and we'll take a break. We'll come back. Ball number two. Let's get it on. But the times have changed. The less I say, the more my work gets done.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast. Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We feature the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Like me on the black and white ivory, getting six on a teetly. You don't want to see a G break your toes like dishes. Buster up the tricks, sleep with the fishes. Running from Lennox up at Venice. They want to have me in stripes like...
All right, Place of Nation, we are back here. Episode 9 of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. One game in the books. It was a lot of fun. Perhaps our most spirited game to date. That little grudge match there. Dan sold his soul to the devil. For a little bit of that Will Skrilla, but I'm recovering. I'm over it. I took some time during the break, took a walk outside, cool off, and I am ready for Dan to tell us what fall number two will bring us.
Fellas, your second fall is a live watch, and we got a doozy of a match tonight. It's Johnny B. Badd and Flying Brian Pillman, Fall Brawl 1995.
All right, great. So we've done one of these before, and that was the main event from International Incident 1996. And so we're back at it, and what we do here is literally just watch the match. We BS during it. We talk about the match, talk about the guys, the time period, and whatever other direction we head off in. So like Dan mentioned, it is Johnny B. Badd versus Brian Pillman, Fall Brawl 1995. It's available on the WWE Network for those that have it. And Will, what is the timestamp that we are ready to hit play from?
If you're watching the network, we are at 6 minutes and 36 seconds.
Okay, so... Dan, since this match is really close to 30 minutes as it is, we're going to let you start the clock for the game here as we count down and kick off hitting play on the match. So I will count us in, we'll hit play, and we will go ahead and get rolling. So on the count of 3, 2, play. All right, so we got Johnny B. Badd and Brian Pillman locking up. And we talked a lot about Pillman earlier in the grudge match game, and this is at a time where he's just starting to move from Brian Pillman a little bit towards the more edgy character. Like, he's not there yet, but he's not pure Flying Brian anymore. He had left the Hollywood Blondes, had his little face run, and kind of, you know, hanging around a little bit. I think he was a little bit hurt, too, in earlier 95. And now here he is coming off his great match on Nitro with Joshua Liger and heading into the show here with a chance for the TV title on the line, if I have that correct, right? Dan, I believe.
I think you're right.
Yeah, the winner is going to get a TV title shot. So a lot of faith shown in these guys to open the show and get things off to a good start. So, Will, what's as always, we'll talk about your background. Were you watching WCW at this point live?
No, not at all, man. I had tuned out of wrestling for most of the early 90s. Didn't come back until the NWO struck hot. But I've always considered myself a Southern wrestling fan, Mid-South, Memphis, the old Crockett territory. And so to me, WCW always had a place in my heart. And it's funny watching this Mark Mero footage. When I first saw him, I was like, man, are you kidding me? Who would do a Little Richard impersonation as a gimmick in the 90s when Little Richard was at his peak in the 50s? But to Mero's credit, you know, he kind of moved beyond that and actually became a hell of a worker as we noted when we watched all the 1994 WCW pay-per-views.
I thought you were going to say Rich Little there for a minute. I was going to say it's a much different gimmick than what Little Richard would be.
Yeah, not Rich Little, man. You know, Brian Pillman might have been able to do a good Rich Little gimmick. I don't know. Well, not with his voice, not with his vocal cords, but
the
that was nice. I'm sorry. I want to just interrupt, man. You know, that these guys are filling in the filling out process early on. And, you know, Mero's going toe-to-toe with Pillman here. It doesn't look like Pillman's walking Mero through the steps here.
Hey, this is really when, like you said, we saw a lot of his 94 stuff. And it was 94 into early 95 where he transitioned from being a guy that could have a good match with the right person. Well, at first he was like actively bad. And then he got to the point where he could have good matches with the right guy. And he transitioned to being a guy that was actually looked at to carry others. Like, he would enter the feud with Diamond Dallas Page. And, I mean, he was the one leading Page through some of those really good matches that they had. And to me, this is a match you hold up as someone like you who may not have understood at the time, like, oh, wow, Johnny B. Badd was actually, Mark Merrill was actually a pretty good worker in the right situation when he wanted to be. And this, to me, this is one of those matches I always think of to kind of showcase what he was all about. And I was watching WCW at the time, but my pay-per-view budget really just allowed for WWF shows. So I'd often watch WCW shows scrambled and then later borrow them from my friend who had the black box that would record them. So I vividly remember watching this match through scramble vision, sitting in my bedroom.
It's funny, man. I was going to criticize you for actually buying WWF pay-per-views in 1995 with some of the horrible product they were putting out. But it wasn't like WCW was putting out gangbusters in 95. You know, they had a few hits mixed in with the Dreck, you know.
Well, it wasn't too bad because I'd get a reprieve through the summer because I could stay at my friend's house and we'd watch them on the box and I didn't have to go to school or anything. And then most of the WWF shows are pretty cheap at this point because they were still the really cheap in-your-house shows, like $15 or whatever. So there weren't too many big ones that I ordered in 95 on my own, at least. But this show was definitely one, like I said, I really remember watching this match scrambled. And you get enough of the picture and enjoy the commentary, you know, sit down, do some homework, chill on a Sunday night, and watch scrambled wrestling. I mean, that was the 90s. Dan, what was your status here? Did you watch the product live at this time? Is this a match you remember seeing?
No, this is definitely very much in a blind spot for me. Like the mid-90s, I kind of was one of these kind of disenfranchised, you know, nothing was really appealing. It wasn't like how I was when I first started. I was starting to grow up a little bit at the time. And, you know, I feel like now looking back, I missed out on a lot of good stuff, like kind of mixed in there with like kind of all the bad stuff everybody talks about. But yeah, no, I'm not, and it stinks too, because looking back, I'm looking at 95. I didn't even like watch like the free Saturday morning stuff either, which, you know, looking back, I mean, wouldn't have hurt any, but yeah, I definitely missed out on something like this.
So a lot of, go ahead, Will.
I was just going to say, I'm just going to say it. I'm glad I missed out on it. And I mean that in the sense that both companies were just so embarrassingly bad. And we kind of see this, and I kind of wanted to comment on, like, maybe not Pillman's tights. I don't really know what kind of motif he's going for there. You know, he has generic star boots on. But, like, when you look at, like, Johnny B. Badd's outfit with the flames and then the tassels, it really just seems out of date, even for that time period. Like, there was nothing cool about what these guys were putting out. And you could say the same thing for Mel Stripper, Shawn Michaels, and Bret Hart with his sunglasses and his shoulder pads on his jackets. It one of my biggest criticisms of wrestling is, and we see it today too, right, that they're not really in tune with the times ever. You know, there's a few points, maybe like late 90s. Man, is that it? Maybe the peak of Hulkamania, you know, when Hulkamania was part of the public consciousness, is just like part of the wacky 80s along with Mr. T and, you know, the other stuff that was going on in the 80s. I don't know. I mean, but for the most part, for most of my life, wrestling history has been about guys not being with the times. So I'm glad I get to watch this stuff on video and pick and choose and ignore all the crap.
Yeah, I would say even into the 2000s a little bit, it was kind of cool still. At least where I was when we were in college into like 02, a lot of people were still into it. I think it dipped after that. But now we're into a weird spot because of kind of the nerd culture that's kind of become pop culture. Wrestling's probably, maybe more accepted than it has been since the Attitude Era in a way. It's not hot as it was, but I think it's not as like, we're not at a point where it's like super embarrassing to say you're a wrestling fan these days. Like, it's just kind of like, oh, okay, you're like one of the nerds who watches comic book movies and does whatever else. That's kind of past being just a nerd thing and into being just part of the culture now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But even then, I mean, like John Cena wearing the jean shorts, you know, long past their expiration date because of Vince's obsession with guys, being the same or whatever. I think when Punk was big, it almost felt like Punk had kind of a pulse on what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm trying to think of someone else who feels like they were hip. But it's not coming to me. Anyone else besides CM Punk?
You mean modern times?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean he's probably, I don't know, like what about like Batista when he came back?
Even then, like Batista, what was cool about Batista was right before he left, right, with the douchey, the way of dressing, like, with the sweaters and the, I don't know, I don't think so, I've never looked at these guys and say, man, that's the guy I want to be like. Right. At least
I don't think we're supposed to, though. Honestly,
what's that?
I don't think we're supposed to at our age. I don't, no matter what how they look.
No, I understand. But even if I was younger, just at no point in time, like in my history,
yeah, there's a lot of kids out there wearing jorts right now. Trust me, they're not the most they're not the most desirable areas to live. But there's a lot out there wearing jorts.
I'm one of them.
There you go.
Oh, damn.
All right, so the match has been a lot of mat work early, and really good mat work. It's been pretty crisp. They flip-flop back and forth. We had a nice backbreaker by Pillman. We had a Boston Crab. But Johnny B. Bag keeps going back to different holds, and even now we're getting into a nice surfboard. So what do you think so far? It's been pretty good, and they're starting enough slow, so you know that they're going to go a little bit by the way they're starting off.
You know what I like about this so far is that they're not executing everything crisp. It's not a crisp match, like one of those Dean Malenko, right, Rey Mysterio matches where everything just flows. But what I really like is that even though it doesn't look crisp, either guy will take advantage of the position they're in.
Yep.
Like Johnny B. Bad was just caught in a pinning predicament by Pillman, and that's when he grabbed, when he escaped the pinning predicament, that's when he turned around and turned it into like a modified surfboard.
Mm-hmm.
Or earlier on, like Bad was able to grab Pillman's head and pull him down into a headlock, where it didn't look like Ricky Steamboat precision execution, but it looked natural and it looked like it was the thing to do at that time.
And I think I prefer that sometimes. I mean, maybe not to the Steamboat style, but even more to like the, I like the Malenko Ray match and stuff, but almost sometimes those feel so on point that they almost scream like rehearsed.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that's one of the biggest criticisms I have with guys like the Young Bucks.
Right.
Where it's just,
they're almost,
man, it's
too
just
in on point,
Or one of my biggest criticisms of indie era El Generico, the current Sami Zayn. Same thing, So, I'm with you on that. And I like that Johnny B. Bad's bleeding right now, because we've seen Bill Pillman like rake his eyes across the top rope and little things like that. If a guy's bleeding, you got to attack the cut. If I'm going to give a match bonus points, you have to attack a cut if someone's bleeding. Mm-hmm. And what I like is that it's not like he's bleeding because it's a blood feud. It's, okay, I got cut open, and, my opponent's cut open, so I'm going to exploit the cut. Not like he's trying to put his eye out or anything.
Right. And the cool thing here is they were both faces, but both had enough of an edge to them to add some nice chippiness to the match, especially when you factor in the stakes, too, with the title shot on the line.
Sure. And Pillman's healing it up a little bit.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he was definitely trending that way. He had been leading up to the show a little bit here and there as well. And the thing that I did like about WCW is the mid-card titles always at least carried some importance to them. So a match like this didn't feel like, you know, like a throwaway going for the TV. Like, the TV title really meant something still at this point, too. So, like, you knew that the stakes were high for them, especially for two guys that were really battling for credibility and for a push. Like, to be in a match for a title shot meant something. So it was palpable that you could feel the, I don't want to say desperation, but how much both of them really wanted it.
Well, what I like about this is, like continuing on my theme from earlier, so Pillman gets away from the ref, and then he starts biting Johnny B. Badd's head. Just amazing. That's what I want. He's going after that cut. And it's just something that, like, you'll never see today, ever, right?
Yep.
A guy just biting another guy's forehead. But then he tried to add insult to injury by ramming his head into the turnbuckle. Badd counters, rams Pillman into the turnbuckle. Pillman's on the mat, and Badd follows up with a slingshot leg drop from the apron. Just beautiful work here. Mm-hmm. This is great. And I'm glad you're giving the background on it, because, like I said, I really wasn't invested in the feud or in the storylines at the time. And so I have to focus more on the in-ring than the storyline aspect, because the in-ring's the only thing I have any emotional attachment to.
And the good thing with this time period is it was right when they were really starting to, and they just both tried to leapfrog, collided in the ring in a pretty cool spot as well. This is when WCW was really trying some new stuff, with Nitro having just started, you know, bringing in younger guys, going with a more athletic presentation, at least in the undercard. Still had a lot of the hokey Hogan Dungeon of Doom stuff on top, but they were starting to flesh out the mid-card with more talented guys. They started making the deal with Japan, and the Luchadors were coming soon.
Yes.
And they were filling out Nitro that way, even bringing in some guys from ECW, and really trying to present a pretty wide swath of, like, what they had to offer. So giving these two guys, and you can see it in, and I know you kind of mentioned the flame tights or whatever else, but you can kind of see it in the lack of gimmickiness to them. Like, these are two guys that were, and Pillman wasn't super gimmicked up, but, you know, had the Bengals tights and the big floofy hair and kind of, but here they both just feel like two wrestlers going out there and beating the crap out of each other. There's no, like, Johnny B. Badd may be a gimmick, but he had really been past the whole super flamboyant Johnny B. Badd stuff by this
point. Absolutely, absolutely. The little Richardness is disappeared by this point.
Right. And these just feel like two guys going toe-to-toe for a shot at the title. And again, why I always like this match is for how just chippy it gets. And you can feel it. You can feel them working kind of snug. You can feel them really trying to do whatever it takes to stand out and take the match and get the title shot.
15 minutes, guys.
What do you think so far, Dan?
Pretty good. It's a little tough when you're trying to watch this and listen to you guys, because you don't really hear, like, the crowd reactions or anything like that. But you, even just putting this on mute, you can tell that both very evenly matched guys really taking it to each other move for move. There seems to be a good chemistry there. Again, I wasn't around really watching and pay attention to this when it was happening, but anybody, even if you're not even a big wrestling fan, you're watching this right now for the first time, you can tell that this is a very well-worked match between these two guys.
Yep, so Pillman got dumped to the floor, and Badd just dove onto him with a tope. Really nice, too. Again, something you didn't see a ton at this time on WCW or WWF TV.
What I like about that spot, JR, is that, it did not feel choreographed.
Right.
It felt like Badd was exploiting the situation.
Yep.
No, it was really great stuff.
Yeah, Badd heading up top now, and both guys just look exhausted, and we still got a ways to go, and just eats a great dropkick when he's coming off the top rope. And again, well, see your point, opportunistic. Pillman sees him coming, throws a dropkick, and knocks him back down. And I'm always a kind of a mark for matches like this that don't have – I know the heat segment works. I know why they do it, but we see it so often. I like matches that don't ever have, like, an extended one where it's – each guy kind of goes back and forth a couple minutes in control, and then I think it speaks to the point that you were making, where a lot of opportunistic shots. So you get Pillman hitting a few moves, Badd finds an opening, he hits a few moves, and it goes back and forth that way.
No, I agree. I want to mention something. Dan said he couldn't really tell what was going on in the crowd. Well, you can look in the crowd and you see people clapping and cheering. This match never gets what I would call really super energetic crowd heat.
Right.
But they're watching the match. They're popping for the twists and the turns. Like right there, Pillman countered, put Bat into a cradle pile driver or a tombstone pile driver, and the crowd pops for it.
And even before that, Bat hit a power bomb for an air fall. So they're breaking out now of the early mat work, and we've switched to the high flying to the floor, the big missile drop kick or the big drop kick to the Bat diving, and we hit a power bomb and now a tombstone. So really starting up the ante. And you're right, Will. I mean, they are popping where they should be. And I think they're really slowly starting to get more and more into it because I think they can feel the chippiness and the stakes, too, building.
But I don't ever feel like the crowd is, when they're not cheering or when they're whatever, I don't feel like they're disengaged at all. Like, I feel like they're watching the match intently.
Well, it's also refreshing not to have, like, a sign advertising a website or a Twitter handle or a hashtag on a sign or something like that. There's something really refreshing about this era where you are completely littered with clutter all over the audience.
Or even over the screen. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, yeah, no doubt, man.
Nice, clean presentation.
There is some for this era. I mean, like I said, wrestling can be more unpopular at this time. And these guys are still going out, working every week, trying to make it happen. And so, I give these guys props. Not just these guys, but all the workers from this time period, Very unpopular time for wrestling, really reaching the depths of interest from casual fans. And they're still working. They're still grinding it. So I'm going to give them props for that.
And it's a period, to that, because it wasn't so widely watched, and for guys like you that didn't live it, maybe better off in some ways, because there were a lot of hidden gems, like matches like this that you wouldn't have thought of, and you get to watch them individually if you want. You don't have to get through everything else to get to it.
I think that's the biggest obstacle, JT, is all the garbage to find the hidden gems. When by the time I had started watching this stuff, people had already discovered the matches worth watching, so I could just go straight to those.
So Pillman now slowing things down a little bit again, but even then, even with the submission hold on, both guys still working. It's not held in long. They're not getting lazy with it. And really, Will, for guys that are going all out and have been going for 20 minutes now, and Bad just hit the kiss that don't miss punch, but Pillman landed near the ropes, arm under the ropes, so Bad doesn't get the win yet. For guys that have gone nonstop hard for 20 minutes, like, they haven't had any mistakes. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a super smooth match, like we said. It's clumsy in a charming way.
Well, speaking of clumsy, Pillman just hit a clothesline from the top rope. Not from the turnbuckle, but from the rope, from off the apron. And he hits that clothesline. And it wasn't a pretty clothesline, but it felt like an effective clothesline that absolutely would take Bad down. And the bell rang, and we had our 20-minute draw.
Yep. And, of course, with the title shot on the line, though, you got to do something. So it looks like Nick Patrick is restarting the match with Michael Buffer here. So it looks like we're going to go on a little bit longer. And, yes, that was a nice springboard clothesline. Again, not the most effective looking, not the cleanest, but, again, it connected, it hit him well. And then they go into the backside that brings you to the draw. So
probably pretty sad that Michael Buffer is the guy getting paid the most who's on the screen at this moment.
Probably, although that would change for Bat a year later when he signed with the WWF to a big money deal. And Pillman as well, actually. So right back at it.
Michael Buffer went to the WWF?
No, Bat and then Pillman.
Oh, yeah. No, but then, I think during the Nitro, the Monday Night Wars, I think Buffer still, I think they started paying him even more obscene amounts of money.
Yeah, he was making some bank.
JT, I just want to revert back to a couple of years ago when your podcast with Scott just started. You guys had Gary Michael Capetta on, and it was one of the first kind of shows I listened to, incidentally. And you had talked about how much Michael Buffer got paid compared to what he got paid for doing the same show. And basically, he just did the one or maybe two matches on the card and how much money he made just to butcher names or, you know, just ramble on. And it's just amazing. It's just, where did all the money go? I mean, this guy has made an awful lot for very little.
I guess I appreciate their attempt because they were so desperate to shake off like the second place loser stink. And I mean, having Buffer there did add, like, in their mind was going to add some legitimacy to the proceedings. Like, we have this, you know, legendary boxing announcer doing our shows. So, I mean, I get what the attempt was, right? It's, we're trying to do whatever we can to make us look like the big leagues. And by having this guy out here instead of, and I love Gary Michael Capetta, but instead of nasally little Gary Michael Capetta, we have the voice of combat sports, Michael Buffer. So, I mean, I get what they were going for. Was he worth the money they paid him? Probably not. But I know what, you know, what they were trying to do. So, right there again, we got another double drop kick. One guy coming off the top, one on the mat, and they both went for a drop kick and collide, and just throwing every bomb, everything they got left as time continues to tick away here.
Well, I think to that point, it's kind of the reason WCW peaked and the reason that WCW eventually fell is that it eventually ignored guys that busted their asses and worked hard and, you know, tried to entertain the fans in the ring versus more of the appearance of things. You know, and I think Vince can be criticized doing the same thing, you know?
Yeah, the problem is WCW, they used those things to get to the top, and it worked. They needed to then transition, and they never made the transition. They stuck with that stuff too long. In the year of, like, 98 was a prime year for them to start shifting, and they didn't. And
yeah, 98 was a really weird year for me as a wrestling fan because I was holding on to WCW, and there were plenty of things to hold on to, like the Chris Jericho cruiserweight run, the Booker T, Benoit, Finley stuff was really hot for a while. Then Rick Martel's reemergence, Flair versus Brett. There were things to like. Goldberg was amazing in 98. Just even the squash matches were so much fun. But man, by the end of the summer, early fall, I was so fed up with this company. And I really hated Attitude Era WWF. I loved the Canada versus US stuff in 97, which really hooked me on that TV. And then by 99, both companies to me, just a creative low that was just embarrassingly bad. Like, I hate the Vince Russo era WWF. Hate it with a passion. Think it's so horrible. I know it was the most popular stuff ever, but to me, I think it did long-term damage.
And I don't think a lot of it. And I don't think a lot of it holds up.
But to me, the problem is I think it did long-term damage to wrestling that it still hasn't recovered from.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're wrong there. So just to recap a little bit, Pillman had a sleeper on, then Bad had a sleeper on, and then a sunset flip powerbomb. And again, business really picking up is just neither guy can put the other one away. That's what I love too. I mean, they're just desperately trying to put the other guy away and cannot get the fall. Yep. Even now, Pillman going back to back pin attempts, you know, just not knowing what else to do at this point. They're both so exasperated as we hit the 27-minute mark of the match here, pretty much.
Yeah, and this really feels like a match where the guy who wins the match isn't so much the guy who wins as the guy who survives or outlasts the other guy. It's not, you know, it's not one of those matches where, you know, you can clearly tell who's going to win. I mean, I'm guessing Johnny B. Badd is higher up on the pecking order here, but I don't know.
Pillman is about to start his run with the Horsemen soon, so.
Okay. I knew he was in the Horsemen at one time. I couldn't tell
you. Yeah, it started about a month after this because at this show.
I will say that was the most insane, impressive match of the spot, which was a leaping Frankensteiner in the corner from Marrow that spiked Pillman right on his head. Really nasty spot.
So it was this show that had the great Arn Anderson Ric Flair match, Fall Brawl 95.
Yeah, that was a solid match. Yeah, really enjoyed that one.
And that's the next month is when they did the turn with Flair. So Pillman is pretty much about to start. It might have actually been later in the show. I think he helps Arn. So the Horseman stuff with him was starting pretty much like tonight. And he just hit a tornado DDT.
All I know, guys, is somewhere in the back in 1995, Sergeant Craig Pittman and Cobra are looking through the curtain, and they're like, we got to follow this?
Right. I mean, these guys just going all out.
Dan, I'll be honest with you. I don't think they gave a shit. I don't think they cared. Yeah, okay, whatever. It's a paycheck. It just feels that's like the motto of WCW.
Yeah.
You take guys who care and reduce them to the point that they don't care, you know, and it's just a paycheck. But Pillman and Merrill proven that, hey, we're going to earn our paycheck.
Right. Well, two guys that were hungry to be stars, and Pillman just got thrown off the buckles into the barricade. And again, well, like we said, I mean, no discernible slip-ups or errors for guys that have gone balls to the wall for almost 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah. They've hit some complicated spots, too. I mean, you know, like I said, not everything's executed clean. Like Pillman did a tornado DDT in the corner that kind of pancaked bad, but it wasn't like the most beautiful tornado DDT
right.
You've ever seen. or Merrill just did a flying leap outside that
somersault,
you know,
senton. That was a Buddy Landell
sign. Yeah, he hits him, but he doesn't, like, the Pillman doesn't catch him in the perfect position.
Right. And here comes Bad now with a tried a slingshot splash, but Pillman got the knees up.
And I think that was one of his finishers at the time.
Yes, yep. So it's curious, too, because, you know, one of the tropes they usually use in these matches are one guy finally makes a mistake, and that's what leads to the pin. So I'm curious if they go that route or if someone just steals a pin in it. You know, I think that'll be the interesting thing to see.
So I see a dollar sign on Pillman's tights. You're bringing up a good point. I was just looking at the dollar sign. I was like,
it's a random dollar sign.
Like, that random dollar sign just caught my eye, and I couldn't stop staring at it.
So Pillman just hung bad across the top rope, across his gut.
Yeah, and the blood, you know, one of the things I guess I didn't like is that the blood never really came into play after that early beginning.
Yeah, it looked like it was probably hard way, and I think it closed up on him, that's why. Right, because I don't think he's had a sense.
Yeah, you're probably right there.
So Pillman just dove again to the floor with a tope slamming into bad. They're both out on the floor.
What was the main event of this pay-per-view anyway?
Ugh, the awful War Games with Hogan, Sting, Savage, and Luger against the Dungeon of Doom.
Oh, God.
But decent stuff in the undercard. Like I said, I mean, this is great, yeah. Obviously. Flair on is really good.
Yeah. Like I said, man, you had to sit through so much crap just to get to the good stuff.
Yeah, just, and actually, I just rewatched the whole... I've been going chronologically through, like, the pay-per-views and clashes and Nitro, so WCW, and... This was, it's a tough year to get through in many ways. Oh, Pillman survives that. He fell and got crotched across the top rope. And I'd bet on that just rewatching it now. I thought that was going to be it.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing a crisscross and a double cross body. They collide. Bad falls on top of Pillman and picks up the victory.
I'm going to say that was probably the most awkward spot of the match because Pillman had originally fallen on Bad. But I guess the spot was that, you know, Bad had to get the pin. So they, you know, Bad just kind of pushes Pillman over and pins him.
Yeah, and it kind of works. Pillman had just taken a rough bump on the top. He's kind of winded. A great match. I mean, both guys busted their ass. To me, it's one of Mero's best matches he's ever had. A really good Brian Pillman match.
Hey, here's a Republican ticket for you, Dan. right there in the front row, Flair Heenan in 96.
All right, so we are clearly over, so why don't we head to break? We'll digest this great match we just watched. The live watch is in the books. We'll come back with the third and final false in the mail, and then we'll wrap things up.
Well, he's so hurt. That man from New York City. You see him in the spotlight. Johnny B's gonna fight.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast. Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Good Will Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brain Buster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
All right, Place of a Nation, we are back. Hope you enjoyed the breaks we've heard here tonight. All new one for the Place to Be podcast feed and the one you heard just now detailing all the shows at the PWO PTBN feed. Lots of great stuff on PlaceofaNation.com. Become familiar with it today. Lots of great podcasts. Well, I guess we'll take just a quick minute to talk about it. The return of a written series. We missed the 90s. Myself and Chris Jordan talked about wrestling video games in the first half of the 90s. So if you were into that, be sure to check that out. It was a ton of fun. The boys, where the big boys play, Parv and Chad, their two-part special ranking their top 100 matches of all time, episode 75 and 76, celebrating the three-year anniversary. Be sure to check that out. It was a marathon run for the two of them, and that is another great installment in their always exciting series. New episode of the NBA Team Podcast as they start their 2015-16 team previews. If you can believe it or not, we're closing in on basketball and hockey kicking off soon, as well as football that just got underway. Scott and I were back last Monday. We looked at No Way Out 2005 as we head towards WrestleMania 21 in a couple weeks. Chris and Bix were back with Charles and Sean Wheelock looking at Between the Sheets, Episode 8, September 8th to the 14th, 1994. If you haven't checked out that show, please do. It's one of the best we offer here, along with Chris's other show, Excel on Bad Street. Two must-listens anytime they're up live. Another must-listen is the PTBN Rewatch Party episode, Raw Live Watch 628 and 7593. Steve Willey, The Cowboy, Glenn Butler, Jordan Duncan, and I don't want to leave it out. I think it was Jason Greenhouse. Steve, Jordan, Roger, and Glenn. No, that was it. Sorry, Greeny. And they looked at those two Raws, included the Lex Luger Slam Heard Around the World. So tons of podcasts for you. Sign up to the two feeds. When you do, sign up on iTunes, the Place to Be Nation, PWO-PTBN feed, or the Place to Be podcast feed. Be sure to rate and leave a review for us. It comes in handy, helps us get more recognized, helps the show move up the ladder a little bit. So toss a star rating on there, leave a few comments. It really helps us out. It's a free way to help us out. And if you're going to be spending money anyway, which I know you all do on Amazon.com, stop at PoliceMination.com first. Click on the banner on the right-hand side. That link takes you directly to Amazon. You can do all your shopping, nothing else needed to be done, and we get a little bit of kickback from Amazon to help us out moving forward. So, PlaceNation.com, Facebook.com/PlaceNation, Twitter, Place2BNation. Be sure to check everything out that we have to offer. And Dan, what are you offering us for our third and final challenge?
Your third and decisive fall is Dangerous Five. And tonight, guys, it is our live wrestling experiences.
All right. And you're going to participate in this one, too.
Yeah.
And we're going to be doing our top five favorite wrestling experience. So this is a different tack than just saying the best shows we've seen live, because I think they do offer different potential for ones that we'd list, right? So there's shows that may have been great critically, but I'm talking here, and what I want us to discuss are our favorite shows, ones that we have great memories of, not necessarily ones that offer the best in-ring action, but ones you had a blast at. And that may coincide. It may be a show that had top-notch in-ring action and was your favorite. But these are ones that you had your best memories seeing live. live wrestling. So I have three honorable mentions. Do you guys have any honorable mentions before we hit the top five?
Oh, yes.
I got a couple.
All right, Dan, why don't you start us off? What are your couple honorable mentions?
My couple honorable mentions last year, or actually, no, this past year, it was a local indie New England Championship Wrestling. They have a thing every year called the last couple of years anyway, called the Iron 8 Championship. Really cool concept. If you're a fan of that sort of thing, basically it's a tournament. And then at the end, the winners of their respective singles matches then go on into this big brawl at the end. The sub-main event involved a guy that I really enjoy watching live, Slick Wagner Brown, up in this area. People may know that name. But it was just a really fun night supporting local and small company. And it was a lot of fun. And some guys passed through that particular company, and it's a lot of fun, and it's pretty cheap. So Cove Community Center, Beverly, Massachusetts, represent. That was one of them. That was from this past year. The other honorable mention that I have, not so much because it was a great show, but I just remember it vividly because I was wearing a Wes Welker jersey in the middle of Boston after he had gone to Denver, and that didn't go over well.
My God.
But this was Survivor Series 2013. There was a kind of a hidden, good, very sneakily good tag team match with Daniel Bryan and CM Punk teaming up together to take on two of the members of the Wyatt family. Other than that, the show was pretty lackluster, I got to admit. But the other side note of that is I remember vividly leaving that arena, kind of being all kind of down about it. And then as I'm waiting at the bus at the train station, the Patriots had a remarkable comeback against the Denver Broncos. I'm wearing this Welker jersey. Everybody's kind of wondering who I'm rooting for. And of course, the Patriots ended up winning. So it took a kind of blah night and turned it into a very good night. And I know Justin hates me for this, but again, I got to give a little props to that awful show, Survivor Series 2013.
Whatever. All right, so I got four honorable mentions. One is a show I attended in college, and that was in my college's gym, and I actually did color commentary for my buddy John, as many know, competed as RJ Brewer. They did a show at the school as a benefit for cystic fibrosis when he was training under Killer Kowalski. And the school, all the guys from the school came and put on a show, and I got to record it. Adam Murray, who does the NBA team podcast here, PlaySpeedAdition.com, did the play-by-play. I did the color. We called the whole show and then aired it on the college TV network. So that was a lot of fun, getting to see John wrestle live for the first time. And he fought Slick Wagner Brown, Dan. So there you go. A little tie-in there. Will, may I send that to you? We can do a live watch of that show sometime. it's an interesting one. All right, so three other ones. One was this year, and that would just happen, SummerSlam 2015. Just because of the experience, Scott being able to hook us up and being inside the luxury box was really cool with our big group of friends. Just a really, really fun time being able to walk around and mingle with our group. And it was a fun show to be at. It was the kind of crazy Brock Lesnar Undertaker match, the really good Cesaro Owens match, and then some of the stuff sprinkled in there as well. Of course, the Cena Rollins match. Also, Rumble 14. So not the best card. But the atmosphere was just crazy because we were all sitting in the same section but kind of scattered, and we're all trying to kind of talk during the show. Bryan loses in the opener, and we're all convinced that he's going to come out later and win the Rumble. He doesn't. Batista wins. The place is going nuts. So, like, that whole atmosphere of being there live for that, and plus just the whole weekend, very memorable for me. Most people that listen to the show would know by now I got, like, deathly ill when we arrived in Pittsburgh, and I somehow recovered enough to make it to Ring of Honor in the Rumble, but I was, like, on my deathbed for about 8 hours. So it kind of made it even more rewarding that I made it to the show, and the Rumble bit was so memorable. And my final honorable mention, and it doesn't make my top five just because of the quality of the show, but as a whole package, the weekend of WrestleMania 29 was really one I'll never forget. We went in Friday, went to the Ring of Honor show, which is a lot of fun inside the Manhattan Center. I'd never been in there. We sat in the balcony where, like, JBL was at One Night Stand. That's where somehow we were able to sneak up and sit in there. It was the first time I met a lot of the crew, a lot of the fans of the show. It's where I first met Brad and Chad and really began to grow those relationships. And I went to the Hall of Fame the next night. So Bruno got inducted and Backlund, which was a lot of fun. And Foley, you know, really good crowd for that, or really good a group for that. And then the tailgate at Mania was just fantastic. Just a weekend where everything went perfect. So many stories, so many memories that we have. And again, not the best Mania, but so much fun to be part of, and one I'll never forget. So that was my three honorable mentions there. If Mania 29 was a better card, it'd probably move up for me. But just the atmosphere of the whole weekend makes that weekend for me one of my honorable mentions.
All right. Well, I got a few here. I had more than three, but I'm only going to list three for time purposes. One of mine was a WWF house show in 1986. Okay, my uncle, I stayed with my uncle in Phoenix for the summer, and wrestling came to town. He took me to wrestling, and the co-main event was Jake the Snake versus Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Tito Santana versus Randy Savage. And on the undercard, we had midgets, and we had Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff versus the U.S. Express and Mike Rotundo and Danny Spivey. And so I still remember that card vividly, just, one of the few cards, one of the two cards I was able to attend in my childhood that just made me such a huge wrestling fan. My next two actually happened in 2011. This was in, I want to say June or July of 2011. El Hijo del Santo ran a lucha show in San Antonio, on the south side of San Antonio, in an abandoned rodeo ring, okay, or rodeo complex. And there was this ring literally in the middle of a dirt field, and me and my buddy are sitting front row because it's general admission, watching one of the all-time legends, El Hijo del Santo. Man, I bought masks and gimmicks, and I felt like a little kid again, just being there with this legend just right there in front of me. This ring had to have been taped up with duct tape and just like it looked like a foam mattress, you know, with duct tape around it. It was just insane how bad of a ring this was, but it was just such an amazing night. I had so much fun, and there were no match of the years or anything, but just, man, El Hijo del Santo putting on his show, just couldn't get it. And the other show from 2011 was Vengeance 2011. And I was looking at the card for this, and this would have been, if it had a better undercard, it would have been in my top five. But I was looking at the undercard, like Sheamus and Christian had a match. I don't even remember it. I don't remember Ziggler versus Zack Ryder. I don't remember Randy Orton versus Cody Rhodes at all. I remember we had Miz and R-Truth versus CM Punk and Triple H when I think Kevin Nash came out and attacked CM Punk. And then the two main events, and this is why it was so memorable, was Mark Henry and the Big Show, and a match which y'all may scoff at, but it was amazing, an amazing spectacle live.
Yep.
Where pretty soon these guys just started throwing big bombs. Both guys go up to the top, and eventually the ring collapses, which sets up a last man standing match between Del Rio and John Cena, which they wrestled with a broken ring. You know, because a lot of the match took place in the back. But live, it was just really an amazing spectacle, especially that Henry Big Show match. Made me a Mark Henry fan for life. Like, I was so locked into his Hall of Pain tour that this was a wonderful experience. And so those are my honorable mentions.
All right, Dan, what is your number five show?
Number five, continuing with the theme of going to shows in Boston, it was Night of Champions in 2012. Couple matches you don't really remember, but they're actually really good on rewatch. Sheamus had a really good program with Alberto Del Rio over the heavyweight championship. They tried to ban or make the bro kick illegal during this time period. You saw the start of Team Hell No, basically, because Kofi and R-Truth are the tag champions, and they needed to have kind of a token title change during a Night of Champions, which we'll probably see when Night of Champions of 2015 commences. But you really got to see the beginnings of the Kane-Daniel Bryan thing. The one that was thrown on a compilation, Dolph Ziggler and Randy Orton. I used to think that the best kind of counter into an RKO happened in this match, because it was one of those like out of nowhere type of moments with Dolph Ziggler. I think it was going for the Famouser or something, and Orton turned it into an RKO. It was pretty cool. And then, of course, Orton eventually topped that with his match with Rollins this past year at Mania, I think. And then, of course, the main event, we had, Cena versus Punk. And I always used to think that Punk versus Cena was appointment television. Regardless of what venue it was, you had to go and see it live. I think they just had remarkable chemistry together, and it was fun to see them live. It was cool seeing Punk basically troll the fans wearing the pinstripes, you know, kind of like the Yankees mocking the Red Sox type of deal. Just a really fun atmosphere. The place exploded when they thought that Cena had won, and then of course when he didn't win, everybody started booing him all over again. But it was just a fun little card that a lot of people probably have forgotten about.
All right, my number five. It was the first time I was ever in Madison Square Garden. That's Survivor Series 2002, memorable show, and there's some big pops on this list that we're going to talk about. That's kind of the running theme through at least four of the five shows. One of the biggest I ever heard was Scott Steiner's debut. In the ring when he came out and wiped out Matt Hardy and Chris Nowinski, the crowd just went like bananas, and his theme blaring with the sirens, and everyone just going crazy. He had been rumored and pretty much announced that he was going to be there. What was just awesome to see. And then of course Shawn Michaels coming back and winning the world title, first ever elimination chamber, a really fun three-way tag match, and just the atmosphere in MSG, a really hot crowd, and a fun show overall. So that was a lot of fun to be at. And again, first time I get to go to MSG, and cool. Number five on my list. Will, how about you?
Well, I'm going to make mine quick because the only match I remember clearly was the main event. And it was a UWF house show in San Antonio in January of 1987. Notorious for a couple of reasons. One, the ring was 2 hours late. Okay. And so I got to watch a ring being constructed. That's when I realized that these rings were made of wood underneath. Then two, got autographs from Chavo Classic, Terry Taylor, and Ted DiBiase. And the main event in which Ted DiBiase and One Man Gang had a bloody brawl in which a young William soaked up the blood of Ted DiBiase off the floor as a memento.
Did you sell it to Parv later?
No, I have. In fact, I've been trying to find the scrapbook. I had a scrapbook for years. I know I had it as early as 5 years ago. I had a wrestling scrapbook that had that. And I have actually the card on a napkin with the winner circled. So if I ever find that, I'll post the card. But I can't find it. But yeah, that's my number five.
It's a par of dream right there. DiBiase's blood. All right, Dan, what's your number four?
Number four was my first trip with Place to Be Nation. It was Money in the Bank 2014. All got met up together in Boston, had a great time. John Cena won. Again, the fans exploded, even though they say that they don't like Cena around here. Just a really fun atmosphere hanging with the guys. We had really great seats. And I don't know, just a fun card top to bottom, I thought.
Plus Aaron George's Funkadactyl dance with that large woman at the end of our aisle when the Funkadactyls were out there.
Right.
What was the main event of that show?
Money in the Bank.
John Cena was in the Money in the Bank. Yeah. Oh man, I remember us ripping that on the reaction show. But
there were two of them, right? That was the one Rollins won, right?
Yeah, Rollins won the earlier one to win the briefcase, and then the belt was held up prior to that show. So then the belt was basically the prize in the main event. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. Okay.
All right, my number four, first ever pay-per-view I attended, Royal Rumble 1994. I had only been to house shows before that. I never expected Providence to get such a big show. And just, like, insane. The crowd was pumped up. I remember waiting in the arena as everyone was chanting for the show to start, just waiting in the lobby in a place that I go to, 18 times a year now to go see Providence Flyers play. It was just cool being there for something that big and that grand. And our seats were crap, and say what you want about the show, The Undertaker dying and everything else. And just something about being 13, being locked in as a fan and attending a major pay-per-view event was just mind-blowing at the time. And got to see all my favorites, and then, of course, one of the more memorable Rumble endings with the tie between Bret Hart and Luger. And Providence crowds always behind Bret Hart, so they were solidly behind him and not Luger at the end there. But had the great Hart brothers, just Quebecers, had the memorable Owen Hart turn, the I kicked your leg from your leg. So a lot of memories, and one of my favorite memories as a fan. How about your number four, Will?
My number four would be a match that actually is sandwiched in between a couple of your honorable mentions. I think it was Dan who said Survivor Series 2013, right?
Mm-hmm.
And JT, you said Royal Rumble 2014.
Yeah.
One of my favorite shows. Front row tickets. You can actually see me shouting at Roman Reigns in the opener on the DVD. Maybe on the even on the network. I don't know. Haven't watched it. Table, ladders, and chairs in Houston, Texas. Live from where I was sitting. This is one of the best up and down wrestling cards I'd ever attended.
Mm-hmm.
I really felt, I was shocked at some of the reactions I heard, maybe because of the booking, because Randy Orton beat John Cena in the TLC match. But to me, live, it felt like the best Cena Orton match of all time, like the best match they had had out of their 30 matches. And then the CM Punk handicap match felt like the best handicap match I'd ever seen. And to me, the eight man, the Goldust, Cody Rhodes versus Show and Mysterio versus Rybacksel versus the Swagger Cesaro tag team, to me, I thought was a legitimate match of the year contender live. And so to me, just a strong card. AJ Lee and Natalya had the best women's match I had seen in a WWE ring up until that time. So to
and that
me,
was what,
just,
Brian, who did Punk fight in that one?
Punk fought the Shield, and then Brian fought the Wyatts, which was a great story. I'm telling, I'm shouting on the front row just because I'm trying to entertain my 15-year-old niece, and you know I'm trying to keep it kayfabe, and I'm shouting, "Just shake his hand, Brian! Just shake his hand! Go to the dark side!" And I'm not lying. Daniel Bryan gives me this eat shit and die look as I'm yelling, and the crap, man, the people around me are just cracking up. And then later on during the main event, as John Cena's handcuffed to the ropes, I'm like, "Unscrew the turnbuckle, John! Unscrew the turnbuckle!" Or I, you know, because I mean, it's a spot I'd seen before, and he gives me the thumbs up. And my whole section just popped. Just I was hoping it made tape, but they had the camera on Randy Orton at the time. But I was so disappointed that didn't make tape, and you couldn't really hear me scream it either. So I was so let down. But I just had so much fun, and it got a legitimate match of the year contender out of it.
And of course, this weeks later, Brian did join the Wyatt family. So
yeah,
you predicted it.
No, but this was just a live. It felt like the best pay per view. But going back, you know, some of it just like that four-way tag is still amazing. But everything
and that's
else,
a show.
It's a little bit.
And that's a show that's not on my list. I regret not going to. But we had already scheduled to have Steve Corino on the Place to Be podcast. So the first time we had talked to him. And we were announcing Kevin Kelly's show, so it was kind of a big night. But that was the night where, in Providence, where Daniel Bryan left the Wyatts when he turned on them in the cage and everything like that, and just had that massive pop. And I always regret not going to that show because that was such a crazy, awesome moment.
That one moment was crazy, but the rest of the show
was awful. But that moment was so great. It's just one I kind of wish I was part of. And, you know, I could have easily gone to the show. It's not hard for me to go. Yeah. But we already scheduled the podcast and everything. So
I had a blast.
Dan, number three.
Number three was my first ever pay-per-view experience, and that was a WCW show. It was Slamboree 1998 from the beautiful Worcester Centrum in Worcester, Massachusetts. Kind of a show that you don't really think of off the top of your head, but then you start naming off what happened in it, you're like, oh yeah, that show. That was the show where famously Vince McMahon did not show up to face Eric Bischoff one-on-one. So Eric Bischoff won by forfeit. There was something called a Bowery Death Match between Diamond Dallas Page and Raven.
Oh my God, yeah.
You had at the time, it was kind of revolutionary at the time, but you had a Randy Savage versus Bret Hart match one-on-one, although looking back on it, it wasn't really the greatest match in the world. It probably needed the production value of and the direction of WWF, but it just didn't happened. Roddy Piper was involved and Hogan interfered. But for us, when we were younger, we were just jonesing for it. We all bought Wolfpack shirts because the Wolfpack was red hot and just starting up around this time or in that vicinity. So they were really popular. Biggest applause. But the biggest moment from this event was when Ciclope wins a battle royal.
Yes.
And you have Chris Jericho was making fun of everybody leading up to that match, doing all the funny ring announcements. And then when Ciclope takes off his mask and they find out it's Benoit, the place goes crazy.
Sure, Malenko, you mean?
Malenko, yeah. Malenko and everybody's...
How amazing is Jericho that he made Dean Malenko interesting, huh?
Right. And so when you see that on YouTube, Big Pop, WCW show, there somewhere out there, there was a teenage Dan McGinn out there just losing his shit during that proceeding. So definitely a fun show that I still hold near and dear.
Very good. I think I was at Nitro the next night in Providence, I believe. Anyway, all right. My number three is a Raw from 2001, actually. Not the last Raw on my list, but this one's from July 16th, and it was just after the invasion had begun, had the big pep rallies backstage. Freddie Blassie comes out in the wheelchair and stands up, inspiring the troops, and Steve Austin was sulking. He was pissed off, felt ignored by Vince McMahon, and he was at the bar, at the Friendly Tap, getting drunk, watching the show. And a couple of cool things happened during the show. That is where Tajiri pledged his loyalty to the WWF. He came out and took off his shirt and had an ECW shirt underneath. And then he turns on Taz, rips that shirt off. He's got the WWF shirt, and he hugs Regal, and it kind of solidifies their partnership. That was neat. Had a really fun Booker T, Jericho title match, WCW title match on there.
And remember, that was a great moment for Jericho.
Yes. And then the big moment at the end. Undertaker and Kane were fighting Diamond Dallas Page and Rhino. The ring filled up with all Alliance guys and some WWF guys, and things were going on and building up to his invasion. And Austin had finally snapped and left the bar, drives over in his car and pulls up in his truck in the back, starts beating guys up in the back with the pool cue, comes out to the ring, and just one of the craziest pops I've ever heard live. Just batshit when Austin comes out and cleans house with the pool cue. And he stands tall with the Team WWF, Kane, Taker, Jericho, and Angle. The Alliance all run out of the ring. And leaving the arena that night, just everyone, it was like your sports team had won. I mean, everyone was chanting, Austin, Austin, as they're leaving the arena. Just unbelievable. Just like goosebumps when I watched that back. So just a really, really fun Raw moment that I get to see live. Your number three, Will.
My number three is a show that, amazingly, I enjoyed from beginning to end, and it was the debut show of Dragon Gate USA in Philadelphia in 2009 at the original ECW arena. And this show was amazing, top to bottom. To me, one of the best matches that they didn't even show on originally on their on-demand service or whatever it was Ken Doan versus Too Cold Scorpio, proving that Scorpio still had it. An insane spot fest with Mike Quackenbush, Jigsaw, Fire Ant, and Soldier Ant versus Hollow Wicked, Amasis, Gran Akuma, and Icarus from Chikara. Just seeing those guys live just perform every move spot on. You know, that choreography? Well, this was great choreography. This is just amazing stuff. Getting to see one of my personal favorites, Dragon Kid, in live, just, you know, kind of like Santo, just love seeing Dragon Kid live. Don't care about the work rate argument or the in-ring argument. Just, I pop for that guy. I'm a mark for Dragon Kid. And my first time seeing the Young Bucks versus Sima and Sumu Yokosuka. And I got to see the Young Bucks show live. And I'd never seen the Young Bucks before, period, until that. And they put on a show. And, you know, got a lot of match of the year consideration, that match. So an amazing main event between Naruki Doi versus Shingo, and just being there, atmosphere, met a lot of cool guys, met my buddy Johnny P, the documentary maker for Barbed Wire City, met my buddy Charles, who I went to that show with. And I also went that weekend to Night of the Champions in Philly, the night after, and Night of the Champions didn't even compare to this show. It wasn't even close. So there's my number three.
All right, Dan, quickly, your number two.
9-year-old Dan goes to the Boston Garden for the first and probably only time in 1991, January 12th, matinee house show. It's the first ever live wrestling experience. Hulk Hogan and Tugboat versus Dino Bravo and Earthquake is your main event. Got to see Saba Simba lose to the Barbarian. Jake Roberts, Rick Martel, just a great, you know, five stars all the way.
Christ.
There was an IC title match and a tag title match. I was wearing a homemade Power and Glory t-shirt. I was Glory. My buddy was Power. Just some awesome, awesome stuff that I really don't have the time to go into right now, but that's definitely number two.
All right, my number two, I don't even have to say much about WrestleMania 20. Just being there for that anniversary show, the crazy crowd for Brock and Goldberg, and the main event, which we won't get into, but just a great moment with the ending to that show. Will, your number two?
Yeah, my number two, also WrestleMania. The only WrestleMania I attended, which was WrestleMania 28, which I got to rewatch for the Place to Be Nation. So I saw it live, watched it on tape. The show holds up. Rock Cena, still amazing main event. Punk Jericho, still amazing. Daniel Bryan getting beat in 18 seconds, really pissed off the crowd. Again, with me cheering Bryan and this little 10-year-old in his Sheamus gear with the Celtic cross, really pissed off that I was cheering Bryan. Had a great time, man. Everybody who's never been to a WrestleMania, you have to go there just for the experience.
Oh, for sure. All right, Dan, what do we got left for time as you go into your number one?
4 minutes.
All right, good. So we got about a minute each. Go ahead with your number one.
Number one is Royal Rumble 2011, my first Rumble that I ever went to. It's kind of the show that got me back into wrestling after a long, long hiatus during the 2000s. Great fun, great atmosphere. Had a blast with the people I went with. And
Who won that Royal Rumble?
That was Alberto Del Rio. That was the 40-man Rumble. Okay. But it was just so cool doing the countdown. It was always my favorite pay-per-view growing up, and just to be there was it didn't matter who won. It could have been Hornswoggle winning. I probably would have loved that show. So definitely number one in my book.
All right, my number one, no surprise to anyone who knows me, the Raw that Mick Foley won the title from The Rock, recorded December 29th, 98. The whole reason I even went to that show was because I went to a WCW house show earlier in the year, and Goldberg no-showed, so they refunded everyone. I spun that money around, got tickets to Raw in Worcester. But even though I went to school in Worcester, it was during winter break, so we were driving up from Rhode Island, and there was a major snowstorm that night. My mother freaked out, worried about us, as kind of a late birthday Christmas gift, got us a limo. So we actually took a limo up to the show, really fun ride up. And the show, we had floor seats about six rows back behind the announcers, and the show itself was a lot of fun, but the main event was just out of control. The pop when Austin comes out. Just, again, goosebump inducing, just something I'll never forget. Just one of the few times I felt like a building shaking, like it was going to blow up at the seams when Austin came out and pelted Rock with the chair, crowd going nuts, Foley wins, we're hugging people, high-fiving people we didn't know. Just an awesome, awesome moment, and one that I still just get chills to go back and watch. And just the whole story surrounding it with the limo and everything else always just adds a little bit of something to it for me.
I think my number one's going to be y'all's number one. Just as a show, not as a personal experience, because it's my personal experience. And this would be the Royal Rumble 2007, which opens up with the classic tag match between Eminem and the Hardys. Like, literally a great modern Southern tag match. Really underrated as a match of the year contender. Then a couple of shit matches lead into Exhibit A of why John Cena should beat Bret Hart. John Cena versus Umaga, last man standing match. Legitimate match of the year contender. And then you get that last 10-15 minutes of Shawn Michaels and Undertaker going toe-to-toe at the end of a very memorable Rumble. Maybe the most memorable Rumble ending of all time. Not saying it is, just saying it's in contention. And so by far, just the best pay-per-view I ever attended. Just electric throughout.
Well, I will say as a group, we've been to some pretty cool shows. We ran the gamut there, Dan. What do we got for time?
52 seconds.
All right. I want to give a little love to a Ring of Honor show I went to here in Providence. First time I got to meet Kevin, stopped and said hi, and it was a long show. Brad had come up, and kind of the first time we get to hang out for an extensive weekend, he came up and stayed with us. But two great matches were on that show with Red Dragon and the Forever Hooligans tore the house down with a tag match. And then the really fun Ring of Honor 8-man. It was Steen, Ciampa, and six-man, and Elgin versus the Wolves and BJ Whitmer, where they really went toe-to-toe in that and put on a really fun match. So just a really good night of wrestling. It was a lot of fun in a really cool setting.
Well, I'll tell you what, to end this segment, I know we're a bit over, Dan, but ROH this weekend, I'm going to the double shot in San Antonio. So I'll be at the pay-per-view on Friday and the taping on Saturday. So I'll be there. So my list might change by the end of the week. So.
Well, you better bring a Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast sign. I want to see it.
Probably not going to happen, but not that I'm not proud of the podcast. I'm just not a sign guy. Sorry,
not a sign guy, Dudley.
Not my style, man. My style is cheering for John Cena to, escape turnbuckle handcuffs.
There you go.
All right, guys, time is up, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the Philadelphia ROH show that I went to in January of this of 2015.
Yes.
A lot of fun with the place to be, guys, and it was three TV shows that all of which were very fun.
Yep.
I know that feeling.
Must watch. Must
including
watch.
D'Amato crop dusting the fans, and also against the Noel Foley in person was quite the treat.
Right.
Hachi Machi, indeed. All right. I know Will's tired, so why don't we do 7 minutes of mail tonight, Dan McGinn. 7 minutes of mail beginning.
Let's
right
do
about
7 minutes and 30 seconds.
7 minutes and 30 seconds of mail beginning right about now.
We're going to the party. We're going to the game. We're going to the disco. And gonna cruise out, man. We're stealing people's mail. Stealing people's mail.
You've got mail.
Guys, Jay Hinchy writes, who from NXT, besides maybe Finn Balor, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, those guys, who do you see being big on the main roster?
Jeez. All right, well, you go first.
You know what? I don't see him being big, but I wish, because I love his style. Kind of reminds me of a guy like Finley. I'm all in on Simon Gotch. That's my man. Mm. That's the guy I'm rooting for. You know, with or without the other Bob villain, that's the guy I'm behind right now. Nice, the Euro style. That nice does. You know, it's amazing thing about wrestling is things that wrestlers do that the vaudevillains kind of ape, like when they're doing like 50s and 60s spots.
Right.
But since nobody does it anymore, they're so fresh that I'm all in on Gotch.
Do you think like Enzo? Never going to be a huge star, but do you think they have the charisma to at least last a while on the roster? Enzo,
oh, sure. I mean, yeah. It depends. The problem is with NXT is that NXT builds their wrestler organically to where the
right.
fans can get behind them and whatever. And WWF just throws guys out, throws them to the wolves and see who can survive. And I think it's a horrible way of trying to promote new talent.
Be curious, too, what they do with Bayley and if, when she comes up, if she's thrown in the midst of this whole Diva Revolution thing, if they let her keep...
If they book her the way that she's been booked, she'll be a failure just like the rest of them.
Right. So, they got to let her do her thing, connect with the young girls, and they really have a chance to capture that young female crowd if they let her continue to, have that connection.
So who's your answer? Who's your answer, JT?
I don't know. They excluded all the guys, I would think. well, how about, Gable, what's their names? The tag team that's just got started. Gable and
Jason Jordan?
Yes. Yeah, that's my choice. I think because Gable could talk and Jordan's got the look. So I think they have a chance to maybe come up and have a good run.
Okay. Sounds good.
Guys, with Rand Paul on my screen right now,
Crossface
Chicken Wing, he wants to know who are your top five wrestlers with politically incorrect gimmicks?
Top five politically incorrect gimmicks.
Oh my god!
Akeem.
How about? Unfortunately, the gimmick I like is the one man gang. This Kamala. I like Kamala, in two matches.
Umaga.
Who else? Umaga. Umaga was great.
Slick.
Slick. Maybe every black wrestler in WCW.
the original Harlem Heat that came out in chains or whatever?
Oh, no, 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 no. You'll never get me to say the Harlem Heat are one of my favorite tag teams ever.
What else? I don't know. Nation of Domination. Or how about the Gangsters?
I didn't like them at all. The Gangsters, yeah. The Gangsters is right up top. In SMW, in ECW, they were mediocre. In SMW, they were awesome. And their feud with the Rock and Roll Express, just amazing. Amazing tag team. Bloody brawls. So fun in Smoky Mountain.
Yeah, I think that's a good group right there.
I'd almost go with any religious-based wrestler as well.
Brother Ferguson.
Brother Love, yeah. Something like that, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
It's all politically incorrect. That's wrestling. I mean, it's all wrong.
The entire Von Erich family? Hiding under the God and Guns banner, you know, to hide their Nazi roots.
Guys, some curious fellow named Parv wants to know, kayfabe-wise, do you think the pile driver hurts only the neck, or does it hurt the top of the head too?
Well, let me admit something. As somebody who's done a leaping tombstone pile driver to a fellow kid on the courtyard, I can tell you the answer to this. Both.
Well, the empirical evidence speaks, but yes, I would have assumed both as well. I would think the mat's hard, so your head is hitting the mat, so that's going to hurt. I mean, your neck is jarred as well, jammed in tight, but yeah, I would imagine both hurt, maybe not equally, but pretty close to it.
Yeah, 11-year-old William was a husky young lad who could pick up little skinny kids and pile drive them on the ground. And I did. And I would have been, if it would have been 12 years later, I would have been that kid on the news who they wanted to arrest for assault.
It was a different world back then on the playground. I mean, it was like fifth grade where I DDT'd Josh Fonseca on the Rock and knocked him out. Knocked him out cold.
Oh, God. All right. Next question, Dan.
You want one more?
Yeah, well, what do we got for time? We had 7.5 minutes.
We'll go 8.5 minutes.
Well, are we even closing on 7.5 yet, Dan?
Yeah, you got 2.5 minutes. All right. There's a little bit of time.
All right. Well, go ahead.
All right. Goodyear, he writes, what metrics, if any, could someone use to effectively measure the performance of a professional wrestling match?
What the hell kind of question is that?
Ask Goodyear. He's asking it.
Repeat the question.
What metrics, if any, could someone use to effectively measure the performance of a professional wrestling match?
Well, if we're going aesthetically, you can go by execution, right? Like execution of movement. You can actually time the amount of downtime in a match. And if they are working holds or they are resting in holds. Mm-hmm. And you can go by quality of logical movements. In other words, remember how we said Pillman Bad was an organic match, everything felt natural? How natural does it feel versus how choreographed does it feel? That's all I got, man. Like, and then that's me pulling that out of my ass.
Kayfabe metrics, you could say how many kickouts per, you know, match time, right? How do you survive the action?
Right.
How often do you cover? You can do how many pinfall attempts. I don't know how many high impact moves per minute. You can do crowd pops per minute.
I got one more quick one that actually deals with someone we talked about earlier today. Adam316, he writes, could Mark Mero have gotten over if he was brought into WWF with a Hall & Oates gimmick?
Yes.
Of course.
Hall & Oates gets over everywhere. It doesn't matter.
But put it this way, all right? So his valet is a rich girl. She comes out to rich girl. When they break up, they have the breakup angle. They can play She's Gone, mm-hmm. right? And then when he gets his revenge, he play Maneater.
And then right? when he's stalking someone, you do Your Kiss Is on My List when he's stalking a woman. You know?
That's right. And when he's searching for his missing valet, they can do Private Eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, dude.
And then he wins the title at the end, and they close the show with You Make My Dreams Come True, and that's it.
There you go. And when he's in a love triangle, Your Kiss Is on My List. Done. Easy. Hall & Oates gimmick.
So we are definitely ending the show with Hall & Oates, no doubt there now. So that's it for mail.
Hey, when we wrap the show up, can you play Kisses on My List just to close the show out?
That's what I'm saying. We're closing with Hall & Oates, no doubt. Whole song we're playing. That's the one I was going to pick too. So, all right, we are done. Episode 9 in the books, Will. It was a fun one. Very contentious. A lot of good stuff. We learned a lot about each other. You picked up 2 more F's in the F jar, so we're good there.
I think I'm going to lose it, man.
Well, that's a tough. Now the question is, do you just go all out and just say, screw it?
I think I am. I think for Christmas, you and Dan will get little $10 checks in your PayPal account. And to prove that y'all actually bought the NWA 24/7, we're going to do a live watch for an NWA match from the NWA Classics.
Sounds good. All right, as I've left Fall Brawl on, and now Sensational Sherry's on her knees looking like she's going to blow Colonel Parker. So we're going to end things here.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, I do want to throw a little shout out because I am going to the ROH shows. And my buddy Pete, a.k.a. Shu, we should be doing a reaction show for the Friday pay-per-view at the very least. I don't know, by Saturday we might be wrestling now. But Friday.
Are you doing Night of Champions?
Is that Sunday?
Yep.
Oh, definitely.
So all that, so, and also be sure to check out Dan's written preview coming this week as well. Should be up around Friday. And then the main event guys are doing a show this week too. And there's a very cool group featuring none other than Nate Milton from Live Audio Wrestling, Review and Impact, and those shows. He'll be on with the boys to preview Night of Champions as well. So stay with us for the rest of the week, through the weekend, Night of Champions coverage, Ring of Honor pay-per-view coverage. We got it all here at PlaceMeNation.com. For good old Will from Texas, for Dan McGinn, I'm JT. We are out. Talk to you in 2 weeks.